This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from a remote location here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. I am actually in what most people would consider a laundry room, but if you know me, you know I have a lot of books. So what I did is I said, I will use the big laundry room downstairs, and I turn my laundry room into a mini library because it's sort of my overflow library. I have a library in my living room. I have a library in my bedroom, and this is the overflow. And I actually love this room. It's funny. It's a very small room, and when I was a girl, I actually took over one of the closets in our house, and I turned that into a mini library. So I've been doing this this for a long time. And in this library, what I've done is I put most of my collections of books that I read when I was a kid. All the Hardy Boys, we have, I think, every single one of them. Nancy Drew. And, of course, my very, very favorite at the time when I was very young, I just loved Cherry Ames. Cherry Ames was a nurse. They were a whole series of books about a nurse. And I actually wanted to become a nurse. Well, no, I wanted to become a doctor. But I read the nurse books, and there was Cherry Ames, Army Nurse, and Night Supervisor, and Dude Ranch Nurse, and Rest Home Nurse, and, Army Nurse. They're all, there must have been about 40 or 50 of them. I don't have quite that many of them, but I loved her, and I loved the books, and that's one of the reasons I became interested in working in a hospital, and I became a candy striper. When in those days, it was so much fun when they used to let girls work in hospitals. And I mean, we worked. We really, really worked. I started working in the hospital at 14, and I was wearing the candy stripe pinafore. If you've ever seen it, they absolutely adorable. And a white blouse, starched. It had to be starched. And we were inspected every day when we came in to make sure that we were perfectly clean and starched, and our fingernails were good. It was really lots of fun. But it was always got my interest in medicine, and later on I worked in a laboratory, and so which is one of the things that I know Sue Grafton, who was on my program many times, and she also worked in a lab when she was young, and so it was something that we shared. Now, this is going to be a special, you know, I have to be careful here. I have some people in my family that I have to take care of, and I love to take care of them, and I have to take care of myself, but I want to keep going here and recommending books that all of you should be reading because, well, you got time. And the wonderful thing, isn't it, that you can read online. So, one, you can buy Kindle books. You can get Audible books. I love Audible books. But I want over the next, today and on Thursday's program and maybe next week, I'll recommend books that you should read. Now, top of the list always for me, she's wonderful, and she was the first guest in the studio, Carol J. Perry's books, Witch City Mysteries, a wonderful series. You can start right at the beginning and just get hooked on it. And that's what I am an immersive reader. Even as a young child, when I became obsessed with an author, I read everything that they wrote, and I probably read everything that was ever written about them. That's what happened with Jane Austen. I became obsessed with Jane Austen at the age of 8. From between the age of 8 and 11, I read every single book that she had written, every word that she had written, and I could have done I realize now I could have gotten a PhD in Jane Austen when I was 11. Now, so I'm going to have some guest hosts this week and next week, I think. we're going to start off in a few minutes with Peter Riva. Now, I love Peter Riva, and actually he has saved my sanity. After Peter Riva, Carol J. Perry will come on, and she's going to recommend more books for you to read. But let me just say a word about Peter Riva. He has a character. He's written a character here. His books are called Murder on Safari, Kidnapped on Safari, The Berlin Package. They are mostly set in Africa. His main character is an African guide named Mbuno. And I am telling you, Mbuno has, because of him, I have stayed sane the past month. Because this is a character that I love. I look forward to reading about him. I can pick up the books now. I've read all of Peter Riva's books, but they're friends. And particularly Mbuno, this is a character so beautifully written that, I mean, I feel that he's not only real, but that I know him and that I could actually go and visit him and talk to him and be comforted and just, that's what we need. Immerse yourself. Find books that really grab you and forget about all these other problems for a little while and find yourself in a book. And I want to also say something. You know, we have to be strong. And I was so happy to hear this week that Vera Lynn was not only alive and well, but that she is still encouraging everyone around the world to be brave, to face this terrible thing that we're facing with the absolute surety that we will overcome it and that we will be stronger at the end. So I want to play a very important song. It was kept so many people during World War II going, and it will keep you going if you keep thinking about it and think about Vera Lynn. And at the end of the program, we'll play another Vera Lynn. So, Ed, take it away, play Vera Lynn, and then stay tuned for wonderful, wonderful review by Peter Riva.
There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free. The shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. The shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait.
Okay, here's Peter Riva, and he's going to recommend some books for all of us to read, and also some of the books that influenced him. Hey, here we go, Peter.
Hey, Patsy, good morning to you, and hello to all your listeners. This is quite a pleasure. You know, instead of making a list of books, I thought I'd just run some of the wonderful things about our world and keep people focused on what's real. And a lot of this came out of wonderful authors and the works that they did. You know, the world is all about connections. My grandfather weathered the Spanish flu in 1918. My mother recounted the tale in her wonderful book, You Were There Before My Eyes. And I would recommend anybody who wants to know about early America at that time to enjoy that book. My grandfather unfortunately lost one son in the process, but he went on to partner with Henry Ford, and he built the Ford factories in Valencia, Istanbul, Trieste, Turin, Romania, and Dagenham in England. But, you know, the world wasn't finished. It's strife and anti-democracy movements, and later under house arrest in Rome, although he was an American, his partner Lancia was being tortured because Mussolini wanted them to build Ford-like factories for their munitions. And my grandfather refused, so did Lancia. They were both staunch believers in America and democracy. But Lancia was in danger. So when my grandfather knew that my grandmother and my father were safely back in Detroit, he shot himself to deny Mussolini leverage in those Ford-like factories. We all have to make sacrifices when things are going on around the world that we have seemingly no control over. And at the moment, you know, America, like a lot of countries around the world, we're in the grip of a pandemic that wasn't caused by us, didn't belong here, and it just happens to come to America because disease moves without boundaries, and we have to deal with it together. You know, sacrifices in times of war, strife, or again, this threatening pandemic, the sacrifices are what we have to do. If we pull together, we can ride this pandemic out and emerge stronger than ever. You know, there was a guy, a wonderful author, James Burke, who used to have a great TV show called Connections. I'll give you a little example. You know, we all think that Henry Ford invented the production line. Not so. It was the British Navy that had a problem making sufficient block and tackle for their sailing ships, and they found out that one worker was better at drilling holes and another worker was better at molding the shaft pins and so on. And so they set up a production line of making block and tackle, and that was the first production line factory in the world. And later on, Henry Ford, studying that, turned it into a car factory brilliantly. You know, James Burke used to always end his show with, if I can show you this, think about what is still secret or that what we don't know about that's out there and that one day you'll hear about. And science fiction novelists have always done exactly that. You know, H.G. Wells wrote about a uranium bomb that could continue to explode indefinitely in his book, The World Set Free, written in 1914. Only 9 years after Einstein's theory of relativity that plotted that course. And by extension, the X-ray, CAT scan, radiation therapy, and a host of other medicine miracles that we all rely on today. Science fiction writers are quite often ahead of their time. Heinlein, for instance, wrote about Waldos, robotic extensions of human fingers. He wrote about that in 1942. And now we can see those in operating rooms across America where a surgeon sits in St. Louis and performs an operation in Los Angeles. And, of course, in every factory, those robots, those extensions of human fingers, are replacing human workers, freeing them up for other vocations. Hopefully we'll train and help train them for new vocations. But the point is, robotics were written about in 1942 by Heinlein. And, you know, in the mid-80s, I was the project manager for a round-the-world flight called the Voyager, first ever circumnavigation of the globe, and I saw machines flying above the Mojave Desert that no one today has ever seen a picture of or heard about because they were so far ahead of their time and they were so secret in development that they're still in some blacklist somewhere with DARPA. I mean, really, does anyone really think that Kelly Johnson Skunk Works first built the A-12, the YF-12, and the SR-71, which, by the way, are all the same plane, in 1964 when it was revealed to the public? No, it was at least 8 or 9 years before that. So ask yourself, what do the aircraft engineers already have in testing that can go into space or fly electrically instead of polluting the atmosphere? All these are coming, and they're coming fast. And that's the future that we have to look forward to. And looking forward to is what you have to do when you're in a tough situation, which we are at the moment. The point is, people, authors, inventors, companies are extending connections into new frontiers every day. Authors today are writing about some of the most uplifting and exciting tales, where goodwill prevails over evil. That's always a favorite of mine. It's why my books always have happy endings. And, you know, look, we may be in a slight setback at the moment, and we all have to help this to slow this virus down until it can fade away or be cured. But the reality is that human ingenuity will prevail if we allow those connections between each other and with good science to win the day. So, you know, keep your chin up, or as Vera Lynn says, look for that bluebird, and smile to your neighbors, or keep them at least 10 feet away, and know that this too shall pass, and you and we will be stronger for the experience. Finally, I just want to point out that there are some authors writing that, you know, concentrate on the environment and the causes for environmental degradation based on science. And one of the things that has happened again and again, happened after the First World War, the Spanish flu, don't forget Jonas Salk curing polio back in the 50s and so on. It's really science that's going to take us forward. It's not fake beliefs and innuendo and tall tales. Although authors have quite often pointed in their tall tales to the future, good and bad. And I would say that we're not at an apocalypse now. You don't have to worry about that. There are great things happening and wonderful things to come that are in development now or super secret. And these will come forward in time and change our world for the better. Look, after 9/11, America changed. We lost our individual gumption for a while. Companies started making decisions by committee instead of empowering individuals to take a risk and move forward. And some of that individualism and entrepreneurship has come back to American business. It's happened mostly on a smaller level. Mom and dad's deciding they're going to open a restaurant or a cleaning service, or a father's going to, you know, move from his current job doing something menial into being his own boss and putting roofs on buildings. All of those may seem like trivial matters, but they're not. They're people getting on with their lives and finding a new way forward. After this pandemic, there's going to be great opportunities for people to find new ways forward. And if you read the most uplifting books, some of them are classics and some of them are modern, go down to your library and talk to them and find out what you want to read, and read things that show you a different future, a different way forward. If I was a coal miner, I would be going down to my library and finding out what this internet technology and all that's all about. Because if I can operate a pneumatic drill 300 yards under the earth and digging coal out of a coal face, I can assure you I can operate a keyboard and learn how to program and to plot a new future for me and my family. So those are the things that we can do in these times when we have to stay at home. Don't just sit there at home idly. Read. Find something new that enthralls you. Watch some good TV sometimes. That's not a bad idea. And I just want to end on a positive note to everybody. You know, you need to get out there mentally and make yourself and the whole world better. The one thing a pandemic tells you is this is one Earth, there is only one Earth, and we're all on it together. And what you do to contribute to the Earth is going to come back around and benefit you. In the same way that a disease can travel around the Earth without any boundaries, the good that you do can travel around the world and come back and affect you and your family. So, and with that message of hope, I guess I'm going to turn this back over to Big Ed in the control room. Is that okay, Ed? Ed's not there.
Okay. Ed, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Peter, I'm still on, so I wanted to say thank you so much for being a wonderful, wonderful host here, and we're going to be talking more over the next few weeks about your great books and how people can really jump into those, okay?
Thanks, Patsy, anytime.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Bye-bye. Okay, Ed, let's do, we're go straight into, Peter mentioned about robots, and wow, this is just perfect timing because we have a wonderful promo here for Glenn Erickson, and then we'll do Larson & Larson's lovely ad, okay?
Did you want to do Glenn Erickson now or right after the break?
Let's do Glenn Erickson now.
Okay, I'm pulling it up right now. Just talk for a couple seconds here.
Okay, because I love Glenn's book, and, you know, it gives you something to think about, and it's one of those wonderful books. If you, again, when you start reading this book, you can't put it down, and it's Android Love.
Okay, here we go. From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android, one who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android Love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and we are back with my very, very special guest, Carol J. Perry. And she has some wonderful things to tell you about books that mean something to her and books that you might want to read while you are in this crazy, crazy time. Okay, take it away, Carol.
Thanks, Patsy. It's good to talk with you, even though we're not across the round table in your studio. I enjoyed so much listening to Peter Riva, who talked about both fiction and nonfiction and many other subjects with an uplifting message. Nice to hear my old friend Glenn Erickson's voice a minute ago, too. So you invited me to talk a little bit about my Witch City Mysteries, which take place in Salem, Massachusetts, my hometown. I was born and raised in that magical city, went to school there, know it well. And when I first thought about writing a mystery series, I thought, of course, of that magical, wonderful city. And that became the background for, I'm working now on book 11 in my series. And each one is a little different from the other. My character, it's more or less a character-driven series. My main character is named Lee Barrett. She's a young widow who was born in Salem and raised by her Aunt Ibby, who is a very hip, savvy, tech-savvy research librarian. And she has, and Lee and Aunt Ibby have acquired a quite magical cat named Orion. My friend Cheryl Holland says you can tell a cozy mystery because there's usually a pun in the title and an animal on the cover. And on the cover of my books, you'll see this lovely yellow cat, stripy yellow cat, and his name is Orion. Not Orion the constellation, but Orion the Irish way. So my character and her boyfriend, Pete, who is a police officer, and the cat and Aunt Ibby, along with assorted friends like River North, who is the witch and a tarot reader, gallop through some interesting, I hope, adventures and mysteries. A cozy mystery is the category mine fit into. And a cozy mystery is a mystery where there is always a murder, usually within the first chapter or so. But in cozy mysteries, we don't use chainsaws. It's not a particularly bloody murder, which involves a little intensive research to find sort of neater ways to kill people. I use Google a lot to find out various things, and I wonder sometimes if people who keep track of that sort of thing find me a suspicious character myself, because I'm apt to look up what's the neatest way to garrote somebody or look up various kinds of poisons. Surprised I'm not on a no-fly list or have Men in Black coming to my door over all that. But at any rate, Aunt Ibby and me and the cat and River North the witch have turned out to become very real to me. The cat, Orion, particularly, he writes my newsletter because I hardly ever get around to it. And Orion's idea of a good book is this: the larger the cat on the cover, the better the book. So I have convinced my editors at wonderful Kensington Publishers that the cat on the cover should be very big. And they are heeding that. In each book, he seems to get a little bigger. My writer friend, Deborah Goldstein, wins the Big Cat on the Cover book, though, on the cover of the book award, because the cat on her cover in her mysteries is bigger than Orion. So far, he's jealous about that. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about me, but I don't want to talk about me for all this time. But the Witch City Mysteries are available from Kensington. They're in any Barnes & Noble and online, of course, too. Now, I know that Patsy has listeners who are both readers and writers and budding writers. And about that, I'd like to tell you how I determined to become a writer. When I was only in the seventh grade, there was a branch library across the street from my grammar school. That's middle school these days, but back then it was grammar school. And we had a small section of the library in one corner that was devoted to kids, not like the very large sections of libraries devoted to kids these days. But at any rate, I haunted that little corner. And when I was in the seventh grade, I happened to read two books back to back. One was called Natalie Enters Advertising, and the other one was A Star for Ginny. Coincidentally, both of those books involved girls, young women, who entered the field of advertising. One was an artist and one was a writer. I had kind of aspirations to both. Turned out I was a better writer than I am an artist. But at any rate, I determined right then I wanted to be in the advertising world. And I have never lost sight of that. My education was geared that way. And sure enough, I did finally become an advertising copywriter and enjoyed a career in that field for some years. I didn't begin to write fiction until much later. I sort of retired and moved to Florida from Massachusetts. Writers don't stay retired. We find something else to do. And I began to write travel articles, which is not difficult when you live in Florida because everybody wants to be here. So I did some travel articles. I like antiques and collectibles, and I wrote for quite a few antiques and collectibles books. Then one day I happened to hear a young woman speak about writing a book for middle grade readers. And my first book became Sandcastle Summer. Some of you will remember, if you're in the Tampa Bay area, the wonderful world's largest sandcastle was built in Treasure Island some time ago. I had done an article about it. And that became the background for Sandcastle Summer, my first published book, which was published by School Book Fairs. Now, those of you who must realize that I am a woman of a certain age, and I want budding writers, not to think that age is any deterrent to writing. Patsy has interviewed fairly recently a wonderful writer who is, let me check my notes, Eugenia Lovett West, age 96 and still publishing. I am not 96. But I want you to know that my first book, Sandcastle Summer, was sold to Willow Wisp Press, School Book Fairs, in 1987, the same year I welcomed my first grandson. You can do this, writers. You can do this. I wrote several other books for young people and then proceeded to become interested in the cozy mysteries. I have been reading cozy mysteries since I was a kid. I don't know whether you count Nancy Drew as one, but I read Nancy Drew, as did Patsy. I read Cherry Ames. I read Pam and Joy. And I read, as I grew a little older, I became very, very obsessed with Phyllis Whitney. Phyllis Whitney wrote wonderful cozy mysteries. And on to the late, great Mary Higgins Clark. So many of the wonderful ones. And the cozy mystery genre is as hot as ever today. I did find quite a few. I'm sitting here surrounded by books that I've tossed around me in a circle on the floor, so I won't forget anybody. I have read a great deal of Lillian Jackson Brown, who wrote the Cat Who series. Once in a while, at a writer's meeting, you'll hear someone ask, who's your literary dream date? Now, the protagonist of the Cat Who series is Jim Quilleran. Jim Quilleran, usually there's a female protagonist in these books, but Jim Quilleran is just a wonderful character, and he has two wonderful, wonderful Siamese cats who are kind of magical in themselves. I highly recommend anything in the Cat Who series by Lillian Jackson Brown. Another favorite of mine is Sophie Kelly, who also writes as Sophie Ryan, who writes, my favorite of her series is the Mystery Cat series. She has two wonderful cats, Owen, who tends to walk through walls, and Hercules has the ability to become invisible whenever he feels like it. They're feral cats who have come to be attached to her librarian heroine. There's Carolyn Hart, who is a favorite. She writes several different series, extremely prolific writer. My favorite of her books is a ghost series. It's not usual, I guess, for the protagonist of a mystery to be dead at the beginning, but Bailey Ruth Rayburn is. And Carolyn Haynes takes this wonderful ghost character through a series of delightful books, and she writes funny. Carolyn Hart is multi-talented, but in this series is really funny. One of my very favorites is Carolyn Haynes, another Carolyn. She writes a mystery from the Mississippi Delta, and she writes about Sarah Booth Delaney. She writes, these are laugh-out-loud funny books, but with really good mysteries and a little bit of paranormal tucked in. A lot of us use magic in our books. And speaking of funny writers, Rita Moreau, She writes the Mary Catherine Mahoney Mysteries, and you hear her sometimes on Patsy's show, so she's probably, perhaps she'll do a book buzz today. And her books are funny, quirky, and very well received by reviewers of all kinds of mysteries. I have chosen Salem, of course, as background for mine. Most of the writers, of mystery writers I know, have made up towns, usually a small town, but I chose to use a real city. I admit I use Google Earth a lot, so I won't send my characters up the wrong way street. Salem has a good many of them. My friend Cheryl Holland uses St. Petersburg, Florida, as the background for her web city. Excuse me, I'm going to cough, and no, I don't have that disease. She writes the Web City Glass Shop Mysteries, and they are set in St. Petersburg. Both of us rearrange the city to suit our plot sometimes, and occasionally I rearrange things so much I have to write an apology at the beginning of the book to cover the fact that I have completely gutted a beautiful old building and changed it to suit the plot. My beginnings of writing fiction, of course, became with the mystery books for kids. And that grew to looking up so many subjects, so many different pieces of research. It's no wonder that I made my character in Witch City Mysteries and Ibby a research librarian. When I became interested in writing for young people, I looked for a book to help me. There are many books for writers or for beginning writers or writers who just want to switch genres. And I found a book called Writing Juvenile Stories and Novels, How to Write and Sell Fiction. And wonder of wonders, it was by Phyllis Whitney, one of my favorite cozy writers. I bought the book, and I was not but a little bit into it when I found this line. When I wrote my second book, said Phyllis, A Star for Ginny, round trip back to that library in Salem, Massachusetts, when I was in the seventh grade. My favorite writer had written the book that set me on this journey in the first place. This is the first time I've had the opportunity to tell that story. Thank you, Patsy, for letting me do that. Cozy Mysteries, I started to tell you a little earlier about the rules for it. We don't do bloody stuff. We have romance, most of us do when we write these books, but certainly not explicit. Cussing is very, very gentle, if at all. My great-granddaughter Jenna, when she was in the fourth grade, my goodness, she's almost ready for high school now, but when she was in fourth grade, I had the opportunity to address her class, and I tried to explain Cozy Mysteries, and one of the kids raised his hand and said, I get it. You write goosebumps for grown-ups. The kid absolutely nailed it. That's what we do. And while I still have a little bit of time left, I want to tell you about some of the mysteries that I love. Sue Grafton, of course. Carolyn Haynes, of course. Susan St. Angelo writes the Baby Boomer Mystery. She writes funny. And these are the stories of Jim and Carol Andrews. She has a new one, she informed me, called Politics Can Be Murder. It's book number 9 in her Baby Boomer Mystery series. You will like them. Deborah Goldstein. I already told you about Deborah Goldstein. I have books in several. I have, like Patsy has, a little library set away. I took what we used to call in New England the coat closet in my living room. It had a place for coats and boots and umbrellas. We don't need those that much here. So I had shelves put in it, and that's part of the library. And as somebody else said, if it's books, it's not really hoarding, is it? I have on my floor, spread out before me, several of the books that I have in various places. As I'm working on a deadline, July 1st, for book 11 in my series, I don't have time anymore to just sit down and read one book from cover to cover. So I have books in three places. I have a book in the bathroom. Right now, it's a book called Moonlight in Vermont, and it's from Hallmark Publishing, because I thought I might sometime like to write a book for Hallmark. It's kind of typical Hallmark. girl comes from the city, has a boyfriend you don't like much, and she meets the country boy that she grew up with and falls in love and happily ever after. In my car, I have in the pocket, window pocket, Andrew Grant's Run. Patsy interviewed Andrew Grant recently, and you will enjoy his book. In my bedroom, on the bedside table, this one you might not have heard of. It's by Elizabeth Rose, and it's called For the Love of a Dog. It's a memoir, and Elizabeth traces a series of wonderful dogs who have been in her life and have meant so much to her. How am I doing for time? I have to look. Okay, I have a little time left. I have in front of me in this assortment my favorite book from last year. This is by Diane A.S. Stuckert. It's called Fool's Moon, and it's a tarot cat mystery. Diane is a wonderful writer. She's one of those I could only aspire to be this good. Her cats talk to each other and other animals. They have a great variety of animal friends, dogs, and even a fish. I highly recommend Fool's Moon, a Tarot Cat Mystery by Diane A.S. Stuckert. You will love it. I'm looking now at all this stuff on my foot. Nancy Cohen. Nancy Cohen writes the bad hair mysteries. Nancy writes funny, too. Delightful books. And they have Marla is the protagonist in her books. Clea Simon. Clea Simon has a very clever stick going here. She has a heroine who is an animal psychiatrist. So this heroine gets to talk to all kinds of animals who feed her clues about the various mysteries. I wanted to get back to, okay, some of the things that Patsy talked about this morning leading in and what Peter also talked about. Critique groups. It is so important to the budding writer or the established writer to have other writers to talk to. We do think of things a little bit differently than others, and I want you to join a critique group if you can. I belong to the Pinellas Writers. We meet at the Rec Center in Largo every Saturday morning. Go on Meetup, and you'll find your tribe. I'm going to Rita Moreau, who writes funny and quirky, is going to do a book buzz a little later, and you've already heard from Glenn Erickson today. Glenn is a member of the Pinellas Writers Group, and I'm sure you'll enjoy his sci-fi work as well as Rita's very funny book. Please have your joy on paper. I'm sort of locked in a little bit, but I'm not minding it. I have a messy office. My husband has a clean office, and we both write from home. I'm going to turn this over to Rita. I think we have about 1 minute, if that's right, Big Ed. Rita's going to do a book buzz, and she's done several for me, and I truly appreciate it. I had so many more things I wanted to tell you, but perhaps Patsy will invite me back. I'll be in the studio again when the world is right and the bluebirds fly over the white cliffs of Dover, and all will be well once again. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Patsy. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Rita. And thank you, Glenn. See you all soon. You there, Big Ed?
Oh, okay.
Now we want to hear one of Rita's book buzzes.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Uneasy Lies the Crown, a Lady Emily mystery by New York Times best-selling author of smart historical fiction, Tasha Alexander. Here's the buzz. In Uneasy Lies the Crown, Lady Emily and her husband Colin must stop a serial killer whose sights may be set on the new king, Edward VII. The year is 1901, and the death of Britain's longest reigning monarch has sent the entire British Empire into mourning. This long, delightful series featuring Lady Emily Hargreaves continues with lush detail, beautiful surroundings, sparkling personalities, and the great mystery readers have come to expect. The Victorian details are engaging. Secondary characters are wildly entertaining. So grab a cup of tea and a scone and sit in your favorite easy chair and enjoy Uneasy Lies the Crown by New York Times bestselling author Tasha Alexander.
Hi. Okay. I am back. Ed, am I back? Okay, Ed, I want to thank you so much for doing this. And I want to thank Peter Riva. Remember, his books are set in Africa with probably one of the greatest characters ever written, and you will absolutely love them. And, of course, the Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries. I just want to, again, everybody, you know what you have to do. We all have to sort of self-isolate and stay away from people as much as we can, which is what I'm doing. And why I named the program Joy on Paper is that it's not just a joy to read, it's a joy to write. So if you are all out there and you're thinking, well, what should I do? Start writing. You know, it's amazing. I could easily write 20 pages a day, and I'm sure all of you, if you start, you can write 5 pages a day. So all you have to do is, you know, take your computer, take a pen and paper. You don't have to do anything special, and write the story that's in your head. Come out with characters, my own preference is if you write happy stories. Now, when this is all over, we don't need a lot of. I know. In about 9 months from now, I'm going to start getting. I don't know how many, ten a week of pandemic books. And I will be going crazy, and I say, oh, please don't send me another pandemic book. I will be looking for the comedies. I will be looking for fun stuff, and I will be looking for interesting stories. So don't just get bogged down in depressive things. Try to think of something wonderful to write, and then, as I said, look for books that will inspire you. And it doesn't matter for example, all of David Baldacci's books are just fantastic books to get lost in. Lee Child's books are wonderful to get lost in. You could start, you know, Lee Child, he's going to be turning the mantle over to his brother, and who, by the way, is going to be a guest on Thursday. Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant will be my guests on host on Thursday, and they will be talking about the books that they love, but you can definitely get lost in Lee Child's books. It's so much fun. And he's so, you know, Jack Reacher's so busy bashing people's heads into cars and buildings and I don't know, wherever he bashes heads in, you forget about everything else. And they're just fun reads. So start reading today. And, of course, you can't go to the library, but you can go onto online and get books. Probably they're not going to get delivered, but you've got Kindle. And remember, if you can't afford to buy books, go to Project Gutenberg. All the classics are there. Every single, you know, Tolstoy or just anybody you want. It's free. Gutenberg is free. You can download them. You can sit at your computers or put them on your tablet, and you can be involved with wonderful, wonderful classic books, and all for nothing. They don't cost you a penny, and you will enjoy that. So, again, everybody be safe, and let's not be sorry. Let's all be safe out there. Keep your distance and do the smart things that they're telling us to do. But I want to play this song, another Vera Lynn song, that sort of says what we all think, okay?
Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.